Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about self-expression, communication, and getting the word out. So jump on, see where it goes. Oh, and have a good time.
Welcome to the Coco Express Show for Saturday, February 20th, 2010. I'm your host, Aurelia Lyles, and we are live. I need to ask you a question. Have you ever looked at something and found it so engaging and exciting, yet it had a dignified elegance that made you want to continue to look at it until you were sure that you saw every aspect of it? Well, today's guest, Nora May Carmichael, a gifted self-taught artist who I call one of the pearl necklaces in our community, is with us. Now, if any of you know anything about how a pearl is formed, after hearing her story and her journey, you'll understand exactly what I mean. Each piece of her work strings together a necklace of experience, culture, love, serenity, and warmth. And it's something that we can embrace and enjoy. Let me give me a little background about Ms. Carmichael. Nora May Carmichael's works have been featured alongside African-American master artists in museums across the country as part of a traveling exhibition for the University of Maryland. Her works were exhibited in the annual Harlem Open Studio Tour, the Coalition of 100 Black Women Annual Art Auction, the Harlem Chapter, Pepsi's Black History Month calendar, the White House National Archives, as well as having some prominent individuals enjoy her work in their private collections like Bill Cosby, Thurlow Tibbs, Robert and Jean Steele, just to name a few. She currently has a painting in an online auction for the Carter Center, and it's item number 52 if any of you are interested in checking it out. The Carter Center is in partnership with Emory University and is committed to advancing human rights and alleviating unnecessary human suffering. It was founded in 1982 by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter and former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. The Atlanta-based center has helped to improve the quality of life for people in more than 70 countries. Now, I can go on and continue with this, but I would prefer to take this time to introduce to you Nora May Carmichael. Good afternoon, Ms. Carmichael, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Aurelia, for having me. Good afternoon to you as well.
Oh, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Okay. Well, we'll begin. You have such an impressive body of work for someone who has had no formal training. Can we just take some time to peer into your journey, your story, just for a few? Now, can you tell us what was it like growing up as Nora May Carmichael?
Wow. That's a loaded question. You know, I had a challenging, upbringing childhood. My mom suffered from postpartum depression, which was not wasn't diagnosed during the, years while I was growing up. It's something that is, more recognized today. And unfortunately, because of her illness, she was unable to take care of myself and my siblings. I have 7 siblings, and, grew up in and out of foster homes. My father was attempted to help to, raise the children to the best of his ability, but he was hardworking, working full time, and so therefore, we were shuffled around in and out of foster care. I grew up predominantly in the San Francisco Bay Area, and predominantly black, all black community. So, I was very much influenced by the, of course, I grew up during the 60s, just to give a little better backdrop, but a lot of the, what would I say, the civil rights movement and those types of things were a big influence, made a great impression, the Vietnam War and all of that made a great impression on me and my psyche, and probably has a lot to do with why I, you know, went down the path and became an artist. And, you know, like I said, it's a loaded question. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Okay. Now, tell me, when did you begin drawing, and what were your first images that you drew?
My very first image that was exhibited in a art gallery, or actually was exhibited in the Piano Factory building where I lived in the south end of Boston. I moved in to the Piano Factory building in the early 90s as a writer. I was working on a piece called The Power and the Light, a play about the African-American experience. And so at the time, my focus was more on writing, and I began to feel that I was supposed to apply color and use paper. That, again, goes back to, I have the skin condition vitiligo, and in 1990, I was diagnosed with vitiligo, and around that time, I began to get visions to paint and to draw and to express myself visually that way. However, I was resistant to that, and then it was like four years later, like in 94, this voice was turned up. I would say the voice, that still quiet voice that we hear sometimes.
Yes.
Kind of nudges us along. I kept hearing in my spirit to use my hands, put my hands to paper, or use color. And in 94, while living in the Piano Factory building, I participated in the annual group show exhibit, which is for the residents of the building in conjunction with the South End Open Studio Tour. So I created my first work, Hannah and Sarah, which I did it mainly because I felt that I was, it was something that I felt that I needed to get out of my system, this response to this calling, and didn't know what to expect as far as what people would think of the work, but I was then later contacted by the curator from the Boston Center for the Arts, who actually went and saw the works at the Piano Factory, and she then later contacted me and wanted to know a little bit more about my work. She, I guess, in her words, felt that I had a gift. So that kind of opened up the door to my desire to, you know, just continue to walk down, you know, that creative path. And it wasn't until a year later that I did my second work, which was titled Concerned Citizens. And again, I shared that work in the annual group show exhibit. And from there, I began to receive support from the other artists in the building, and just a lot of encouragement, and then applied to the National Black Arts Festival that year, and was, this is now under 2 years. I only had two drawings. I applied to the National Black Arts Festival. I created two other works. They required that, it was a juried exhibition, and they required that you send them four slides, so I created two other works. So I had four paintings. I don't know, I had a lot of nerve, but or I was almost hoping that I wouldn't have been accepted, so then I wouldn't have to really answer this calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't think that I was going to get in, but I did, and so then, therefore, I had to create enough work to fill a 10x10 boot space at the Greenbrier Mall in Atlanta, Georgia, in 96, and I had a really wonderful reception from all the good folks in Atlanta and the people that came to the National Black Arts Festival that year, and that's pretty much what set me out on this journey, as you would call it, and here I am today, still going strong. And there have been times that I've, you know, wondered why I am, didn't go in another direction, because it has been challenging at times. But today I'm very grateful and full of gratitude and just appreciation for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what they say, when much is given, much is required, so.
Well, that is truer and more real every day that I step forward. I really understand that better and better. And, you know, I guess you have to have the stamina, you have to have the determination, and that can only come from within, and an appreciation that we all have a purpose and that we all are here to serve one another, and that, you know, it's always about choices. We can choose to say no, or we can choose to say yes. I think when we say no, there's a greater consequence than to saying yes, you know, and moving beyond that fear, being ready to stand on your own two feet and face the challenges is much more rewarding than laying down and giving up on your dreams or giving up on your calling, your purpose, you know.
Yes. Now, my question is, what was it like to be selected to paint an ornament for the White House's Christmas tree?
That was really a true blessing. It came at a really critical time, an important time, because my mother had passed away a month before Shabana Bailey McLean of the West Harlem Art Fund. She had seen my work at the Harlem Open Studio Tour, and she contacted me just a few months after my mom had passed away and asked if I'd be okay if she nominated me to create this ornament. And I saw it as a something that my mother orchestrated, because I always had a challenge during the Christmas holidays. My mother, the first experience, like I said, going back to when she had the postpartum depression, and my first experience going into foster care was after an episode that my mother had when I was 3 years old, and we ended up on Christmas Day taken out of our home, and so this was going to be my first Christmas where my mother, you know, was no longer here with us, and the ornament gave me something to focus, something positive to focus in on, and I saw it as a gift from my mom and an opportunity to share with many people. I don't know, thousands of people go through the White House to look at the blue Christmas tree, and so it was a chance not only for me to experience, you know, something positive during the holidays, but also to share with many others, and that I was very excited about.
Oh, great.
Very humbling. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you were also invited to the White House by the former First Lady, Laura Bush, as one of the few artists who participated in the exhibit. How was that?
Right. That was really special. I mean, I was always very curious to see what, like, I'm sure, you know, so many others are curious to know what the White House actually looks like inside, and just such, you know, the history there. And and it was very beautiful. It was very inviting. I got a chance to meet many artists from around the country, it will always be one of those memories that's really impressed in my heart, just as far as being a child growing up the way I did. Something seemed like they're so far from the realm of possibility for you to experience, limited education and those kind of things. I just never necessarily saw myself having such a great opportunity and to be invited for something that of my own accomplishments, you know, to have that honor to be invited to the White House. So it was really special. Always will be.
Okay, we're going to talk about your work for a minute there. Okay, I had the opportunity to go on your website, and I looked at your work, and I have to tell you, your work, it has a voice that's so strong. It's filled with such a warmth, it has energy, light, color, love, and, you know, they say that the eyes are the mirror to the soul, and all of your paintings, in all of them, I see this gentleness and peace in the eyes, and it's like, yes, I've been here, survived, and I understand. And I just can't help, each time that I looked at each piece, I was just so drawn into it. When you're doing this work, you can tell that it comes from your heart. How are you feeling as you're creating these images and portrayals that you're creating?
Well, Aurelia, I feel that every individual is a blessing, each one of us. And I take the time to study faces. I try not to stare, but I think everyone is beautiful. Every face is beautiful. It's God's creation. And I, the characters that come out, they are not people that I know, but I'm sure they have a little bit of everyone that I come across. Especially being here in New York, you know, riding the subway, my goodness, and all of the various types of faces that are juxtaposed one next to the other, unlikely characters that in other situations would probably not meet or talk to one another, but to see sitting next to one another and sometimes so close, you know. And so when I'm working, when I'm creating the work, I won't necessarily say that I'm creating it. The work is using me as a, basically I feel that I'm a servant. So as the characters start to emerge, I think about just our common humanity, our, those things that make us human. And I try to give each face, bring that humanity or the love that I feel and the love that I feel that we all have for one another, for life, the experience of life. I try to just be obedient to the characters and give them that, just attention. It's like getting someone ready, getting your child ready to go out to meet the public. You want to comb their hair and get their clothes just right and so on and so forth. So I just give the characters the attention that I don't have children, so maybe this is, you know, my way of releasing those maternal feelings. And so, again, it may be what you're seeing in their eyes and those kind of things, or the expressions, are coming from probably a maternal place of love and tenderness. And of course, the eyes are very important. I try to always have eye contact with others because, you know, you want to let people know that you're listening, you're paying attention. So the eyes is a way of also bringing in the viewer to pay attention to the characters and to think about our common humanity.
Now, do you feel that if you had a life that was traditional in a sense, I mean, not having to have go through the various foster homes, and a lot of people don't know that you are biracial descent, and do you think that you would have accomplished all that you have had things have just been just regular traditional situation without all of the different turmoil you've experienced?
Well, you know, it's funny to say. Sometimes I think that, you know, I look at people that have come up with where they had the support of, you know, both parents and, you know, just strong family background. And many people do great things, sometimes greater things, because of their background and having that kind of support. And then, you know, and so I wonder sometimes, had I had certain support and ability to afford to, you know, to have been able to afford to, you know, go to school and those kind of things, and not had the many stresses and such, what would I have been able to accomplish? On the other hand, I do think that our experiences shape us and mold us, and so what I do is, you know, any accomplishments that I've been able to achieve are, I'm sure, have a lot to do with the many challenges, and also what has come through this. I've found that though I may not have had the traditional family support, I get a lot of support through friends. And when I say not the family support, what I mean is I have my siblings and I are close, and my mother, though she was not able to raise us, I very much knew that I was loved, and so by her and by my father, he worked very, very hard to try to keep the family together. But I say all that to say that ultimately, I think regardless of our experiences, however we grow up traditionally or non-traditionally, what we're able to accomplish comes from having a strong sense of who you are, what's important to you, what are your values, you know, what are you here to contribute. And so I don't know if I would have known that, but I think that I would have, because I pretty much have a strong sense of self, you know.
Well, I think we have a call on the line. I think someone would like to ask you a question. Would you mind?
I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, okay, I hear you. Uh-huh.
Okay, hold on, please.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
This is Nora still.
Okay, hi, Nora. I guess, I don't know, I thought that someone wanted to ask a question, but evidently I just see that she's probably not available, so we're gonna move forward. I have another question that I wanted to ask you as well, and that is, how do you, what would you tell anyone about pursuing his or her dream?
What would I tell anyone about?
What would you tell anyone about pursuing their dreams?
Oh, goodness. This is a must. It's a must. this is your life. This is it. This is it now. You're here. You're present. You better get to it. You know, there is nothing. I think. How can I say? The least fortunate thing in life is to have regret that you did not try. And anyone will tell you that. Any person, I'm sure, an elderly person, if you ask, they're going to tell you, you know, regret is probably the most disappointing aspect of life. So I would say whatever it is that you have a calling for me, when I go into an art supply store, I just become overcome with joy because I think of all of the possibilities. For someone else, it may be if they go into a gardening store or a place where it, you know, where there's cooking utensils or goodness knows, music, whatever that creative outlet. Some people get excited when they see journals because they know that they have stories to write. Get something. I started with crayons, color pencils, because that's all I could afford. That's what I made Pam and Sarah my first work with, Bristol board paper. I chose quality paper, but always make sure that it doesn't cost much to fulfill your purpose, your dream. If we can work 8 hours a day to pay the rent, and oftentimes many of us do that so that we can, you know, survive. However, if you can work for someone else for 8 hours, take an hour at least a week. Start with an hour doing something that you love to do, because I feel that our purpose is to serve one another, and when we serve one another at our highest and our, at our best, it's when we are living our dream and being who we are. That's how we can rise, you know, above a lot of the circumstances and the challenges in life, is by living a dream. So I would just, for anyone listening, I'm so serious about this. Go invest a little bit of time, a little bit of money, if it costs money, and just start a little bit. And as you continue to step forward, walk forward to your purpose and dream. I mean, this phone call that I'm having with you is, this interview that I'm having with you is an opportunity for me to do something that I've always wanted to do, which is to have a chance to encourage other people. And I get so much out of encouraging folks and then seeing them actually trying and making an effort. And this interview would not take place if I hadn't myself continued to step forward towards my dream. So
We have another call on the line. Just hold on for a second, okay?
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, hi. Hello, Valencia.
Hi.
Valencia, hello. Hi. Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you? How?
Good. I just wanted to say this is a great interview, number one. And number two, you're welcome. And number two, I wanted to just reiterate what my sister was saying about your work. I fell in love with Nora's work. There is a piece she did called Facing Forward, and it's a vibrant blue. It has such a affirming, vibrant blue, and these eyes that look at you and say, go forward. You know, it was a piece that so inspired me, and Nora gave me a postcard of it because she was she had a showing at the Harlem School of the Arts here in New York, and I cherish that postcard so much. And I just want, you know, listeners to know that, you know, please get a chance to, you know, have a look at Nora's work, because, you know, it is life-affirming, and it is so soulful, and it is something that really touches you. And I had, I was blessed to see the piece that will be in the Carter Center auction, and she has done this magnificent job of expressing who we are as people from around the world. And she's put, you know, every possible being that could exist on this planet in this piece, and it really speaks of hope and humanity and a coming together of people for the good of us. So I just want to say, Nora, continue to do what you do as a person and as an artist. And it's been my pleasure to know you and your work.
Valencia, like, thank you very much. And Valencia is one of those people living her purpose. She's a wonderful singer and with a great, amazing talent. And so coming from you and just your support, and she also has a daughter, Havian, who's a wonderful artist. Havian and Valencia are my neighbors and have encouraged me throughout the process of creating the work for the Carter Center and have just been a great blessing to me. So I thank you very much, Valencia, for calling in and, you know, just giving me that, endorsement.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure because I really am a fan.
Who am I? I mean, the work is beautiful. It's just amazing. And your website, can you please tell our listeners where they can view your work?
Okay, yes. I should first preface by saying that my website is in the process of being updated, so some of the information is old and there are newer works that will be posted soon. But my website is just very simple, my name, which is, you know, Norma Carmichael. NormaCarmichael.com. No spaces, just NormaCarmichael.com. And like I said, in about a week, there'll be some more recent updates. So you can take a peek now, but then come back and check it out about a week from now.
Okay. Now, can our listeners who live in the New York City area, where can they go and actually see your physically see your work?
Well, they can presently, there's some work, if they wanted to see the work in New York, they can schedule by appointment or just send an email to me or go to my website. There is a phone number there as well where they can make an appointment and I can send them information or by appointment. Do the work.
Now, for the private collectors, how do they go about? Do they come see your work, or do you make special paintings for them, or it's just, how does that work?
I'm open to commission works, and I have done commission works in the past, I'm sorry, part of that question you asked for private collectors, let's try that again.
Okay. If there's someone, you know, for private collectors, I'm not too well versed in that. And
okay.
How would they go about, you know, do you commission work or do you create something for them or do they just buy whatever it is that they see?
It can be either or. You know, oftentimes people will like something that they see, they connect with it, and then, you know, that, is a possible way of them, you know, having my work in their collection. Or at exhibits, various exhibits that I've had in the past and that I will have in the future. There is a gallery that has represented my work here in New York, but I've been working on so many other projects that there isn't anything presently there at the gallery. So I think the best way is just to email me. I'll put, you know, folks on my mailing list, and I will keep them current on what's coming up next. And if there's a strong interest in, you know, purchasing a work or that kind of thing, just express what the interest is, and we'll follow up from there.
Okay.
But yes, I will do commission works on occasion, and that means just depending on what other projects I'm working on at the time, if I can somehow work in a commission work, I will do that.
Okay, that's excellent. That's good to know. Now, I guess we are coming close to the end of our show. However,
Okay. What
we didn't do was we didn't explain exactly what it was that you, the ornament that you created for the White House Christmas tree. And I just want you to give our listeners the theme and the ornament that you created specifically for that event?
Okay. That in 2007 was the Laura Bush selected the theme for the White House Christmas tree, and her theme that she chose was our national parks. And various artists throughout the country were, again, nominated to create a park in the area where they resided. And for myself, Hamilton Grange, the home of Alexander Hamilton, which was on Common Ave, was the park site or the monument site that I was offered to depict. And so, therefore, I chose to incorporate the image of Alexander Hamilton and the Grange, his home, and I did it in four seasons and divided the ornament into four sections so that I was able to, on two sections, I incorporated the actual image of Alexander Hamilton, and in all four sections, the Grange, the home, is either behind him in those two sections or prominent in the other two sections. I know that sounds a little confusing, but, and then again, I incorporated the four seasons so that no matter what side you looked at the ornament, you were looking at, the Grange or the one season or another of life.
Okay.
Like in summer.
Okay.
Was that clear?
Yes, I understood it. You know, it's difficult to explain, but everyone knows that an ornament is round. So what you were able to do, I know that I couldn't do it. I'm not going to lie. It's nothing short of amazing.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
One thing that's of interest about that is that there was horses hair that was used in the plaster at the time when the Grange was built back in, oh, goodness, the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
And the Hamilton Grange is now has been moved from Convent just recently to St. Nicholas Park, which I would encourage people to go. They're renovating it right now, but the park ranger gave me some of the hair from the plaster from the walls of the home where he resided, and I put a little bit of that hair inside of the ornament so that it's now in the National Archives where a part of something from Harlem, from Alexander Hamilton Grange, is now in our National Capital. So, in the permanent collections.
Wow, that's wonderful. And this is just what I'm saying. See, many people don't know that when a pearl is being formed, it's a lot of irritants and different, I guess you could say, really difficult situations that create the beautiful pearl that we see. And that is why I call you the pearl, one of the pearl necklaces of our community, because you've endured and overcome a great deal of obstacles and some hardships. And you were able to create these bodies of work that just embrace so much energy and love and warmth. And I don't think that everyone has that ability to look at what they've gone through and still be able to create beauty and warmth and love. Sometimes they go to the dark side, but I thank God. And, I'm so glad and honored that you decided to go and walk to the light and give us such wonderful, beautiful work. And, I look forward to seeing the creations that you plan to give us in the future. And I just wanted to thank you.
Well, Aurelia, I thank you. And I do believe that everybody, it's a choice. It's, look, I've gone through the dark tried myself. There are times that I've given up. And, you know, we just have to just remember that life is amazing. It's wonderful. We are so blessed. We are living in abundance. And oftentimes we don't even realize that. And if we just focus in on the abundance and lay down a lot of the petty things and just focus in on your gifts and talents, think about how you can help and encourage and support somebody. Start with yourself, your family, your neighbor, your city, your country, you know, the world. But just start with yourself. Don't get overwhelmed. Don't feel discouraged. Don't let anything stop you from living your dream. That's just plain and simple. And I believe that we all can do that. I have faith and confidence in every individual. I know that, you know, life has lots of challenges, but there are so many more wonderful and great things than those things that are awful and terrible. So we just have to keep our focus on what's important. And, you know, life is now, and do it now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Well, I believe that concludes our show for today. And I would like to thank you so much, Nora Mae Carmichael, for joining us. And for those of you who are interested in seeing her work, please go to her website. You will not be at all disappointed. You will be so impressed. It's noramaecarmichael.com. NoraMaeCarmichael.com. Nora Mae, thank you, thank you, thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, Aurelia. Thank you to all the listeners and everybody. Many blessings.
Okay. And so that's our show for today. I want to thank my listeners, and I'm your host, Aurelia Lyles. Please join us next Saturday when we will have Peter Westbrook on the show. He is a 13-time national champion and Olympic medalist in the sport of fencing. His life's mission is being carved with every stroke of the foils his students practice with. Join me, join us. Find out exactly what I mean. Thank you and have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day.
This is our stop for now. So come back soon and hang out with Aurelia Lyles on the Cup Express. See where she goes next. Until then, keep it real.